Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of The Podyssey. It seems like hardly any times we're in this studio with me coughing away, but we're back. Chaps, welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm joined, as always, by Sam, Roberto and Nick, The Odyssey's resident film geeks, I mean experts. So lads, what have you been up to? Big month for films this month, of course. What's been happening in the world of film, as if we don't know? There was a certain big ceremony last week that's probably be good to talk about.
Yeah, no, of course. We're going to mention the Oscars 2025. I do believe Roberto quickly wanted to say something about it. First off,
well, other than that, this is the first year I tried watching the Oscars, and I got to about 2 a.m. before I had to tap out. Unfortunately, that show goes on long.
It's very long.
Never tried to watch it. Just tell you, it's quite long. Lots of ad breaks for the Americans, apparently, which means we get Jonathan Ross talking to people, which is that's fairly entertaining, to be fair. Mm. But yeah, I didn't watch all of it. I didn't get to see the Best Picture reveal, but obviously the news came out the next day, and yeah, I think it was a really interesting Oscars year, especially compared to last year, where a lot of the films that were nominated were very mainstream, I'd say, very much on the higher end of the budget scale. Mm-hmm. Whereas this year was a year for the smaller films, a year that a lot of films that probably wouldn't have been nominated any other year got nominated. The Substance, for example, very rare to see a horror film in the Best Picture category.
Yeah, absolutely,
especially that one.
Yeah, that one, that one, which is one of the most bug nuts ones I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very unusual. And then yeah, see like films like Anora and I'm Still Here get nominated, and there were some big ones as well, but yeah, and I can't say there were any outrages for me. I might be just very
you're happy with saying, the wins.
I think even though The Substance was my favorite of the year, I kind of accepted I was never gonna win Best Picture against some of those, but you know, really well deserved for the actors, Mikey Madison, Kieran Culkin, Adrian Brody especially, and I haven't seen Zoe Saldana's performance yet, but from what I've heard, it is very good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it kind of seems a lot of people got their kind of just dues this Oscars. The only kind of major snub I can think of is that Luca Guadagnino, who made two films this year, for, Challengers and Queer, didn't get nominated for anything, which I'm sure is a bit of a stab in the chest for some of the teams on those films. But, you know, those are very well-liked films, and they got their victories in their own way. So, yeah, but you guys might have some more controversial takes.
So, Nick, you've been championing Anora, as all listeners of the podcast will know. So, yeah, you and quite a good year, as Roberto said, for independent cinema. So you must be quite pleased, I imagine.
Yeah, no, very pleased with the winners. Anora sort of cleaning up with Best Director, Best Editing, Best Picture, Best Actress. I mean, you really can't do any wrong there. I thought it was a great movie overall. I've praised it enough, and I feel like it got its just desserts. I'm really proud that it got to showcase what it has with its acclaim, and sort of pushing the boundaries with indie film, breaking the boundaries, but also going into mainstream. Obviously, not a lot of people may have seen Anora, but as you were mentioning it at the beginning, or someone was mentioning at the beginning, that sort of the difference now where we sort of see big budget movies, mainstream versus, you know, sort of indie, low budget. And this is a total win for that. You know, I don't think the film was more than $6 million budget, I believe. Yeah, yeah. And he had Brutalist was made for less than $10 million or around that area. So it shows that, well, I believe it shows that you don't have to make it. You don't have to have a huge money behind you to make brilliant film. What counts is your acting, and you've got great craft and talent behind it. And you can tell these people have worked really hard within their own films and have now got the awards to showcase and to prove that these are great movies. However, you know, we're going to go on to relevancy and sort of what it is. I'm going to pass over to you, Sam. Mm-hmm. What did you think about that win? And what also do you think is the main draw for the Oscars year after year?
I was going to ask you guys this. Yeah. So as a layman, right, I wonder how much does the Oscars still matter? How much is it relevant? So, for example, the things that we all know make Hollywood a ton of money, like the Marvel Universe, don't get a look in, you know, kind of fair enough because they're not of the storytelling standard of an Anora or something. The speeches seem increasingly out of touch with a kind of cost of living battered world. Mm-hmm. The ceremony, which is supposed to essentially be an advert for Hollywood's product, is like a kind of 4-hour black tie yawn fest from the 70s. So is it still relevant, Sam?
Yeah, I think it is. It's an interesting thing. I think there's a lot that the Oscars need to do to tackle that whole thing. I mean, the show is extremely long and quite laborious by the end to watch. The speeches are very long, and there's lots of just kind of random things. But there was a 10-minute section dedicated to James Bond, which Amazon might have paid for some reason. But it felt very random and not really important, and just a real additional drag on the show that was already way too long. I think there is still value in having like a big award show or the big award show for film. I think the Academy are still trying to tackle this, and they're trying to diversify the type of films that are nominated
and you can see that, to be fair.
Yeah, definitely. I think this year is a really good example of that. There's two international films nominated for Best Picture, which is the first time that's ever happened.
That's,
I think,
very rare.
Which is really great to see. I think for me, I keep hearing recently, just by listening to podcasts and things, about this phrase of the monoculture that used to dominate Hollywood and kind of Western and global culture generally, of like there would be every year a couple of big films that pretty much everyone would see, and everyone
and
would buy
they'd
the
win
DVD
an Oscar.
And then they'd win the Oscar and they'd be nominated for the Oscars. But now we live in a world where the media and cinema is so saturated, and there's so many films, and there's a million streaming services, and it's impossible for anyone to see all of them and to really know which ones are worth seeing and worth talking about. I think, for me at least, despite the Oscars feeling very out of touch, I think in the last couple of years at least, a good few of the most nominated films have been kind of my favourite films of the year and lots of people I know's favourites, or they've just been great films, really. And I think, setting aside all the kind of pomp and circumstance of the Academy, it's still nice to see that they are celebrating these little films that otherwise would never get a look in, and then all of a sudden Anora, now loads of people are going to go and see it, and it's a terrific film. And like Nick, you were saying, it's an independent film made for $6 million, which in any other circumstance very few people would see it, now loads of people are going to see it. So that's, for me, that's where the value and the relevance still is.
Yeah, that makes sense. And in fairness, the Oscars is two things, isn't it? The Oscars is the actual shortlist of films and the winners. Mm-hmm. And it's also
the
mad 6-hour event.
Red carpet.
Exactly. Yeah, the Oscars is both those things. And the first one, that is the actual bit rating and awarding the films, is relevant.
Exactly.
But maybe they could do with changing up the weird
side. Just an example. So the Grammys in America have a lot of their awards given out in a ceremony which is not even public. Or publicised on broadcast or anything like that. Bearing in mind there is a lot of awards in the Grammys for every single genre of music you have there. But their most important ones are then broadcast in like a miniature 2-hour ceremony, which is actually for the public and gets audience involved and stuff like that. So maybe there's a sort of saying to say, like, or a way to get in there and be like, okay, well, the things that, you know, people love, which is best film and best actress and best actor, perhaps they can be sort of publicised to the extent, because specifically because they are celebrities as well, these people, most of the time. So it's like pushing that celebrity culture versus what film lovers really love, which is production design and any sort of category that, or any nomination involved, just loving the film. And on what Sam says, I think specifically this year was a good one for film lovers. Mm. And, you know, both me and Sam, I think we said both our favourite film was Anora this year. And proof's in the pudding, guys.
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah, you were right. I was a little bit, disappointed is too strong a word. I hoped Sing Sing might get something. Just because it was properly different, you know, like using the prisoners. Like, I thought it might nick something just for being so brave and different. But, you know, you can't have everything.
I think, Coleman Domingo getting nominated for actor, and then it also got nominated for best song. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, because I think Adrian Brody was good in The Brutalist, but I think just to get some Sing Sing, like, representation, I wouldn't have minded a Coleman Domingo curveball there. And it was interesting because the BAFTA nominated Clarence Macklin, who played, played himself in the film. Yeah. And it was really nice to see him get nominated for that. I saw a clip actually of him, like, he like was at the one of the award shows, and he Harrison Ford like walked past him, and he like had a chat with him, and he was like so happy about it. I think that's a one I forgot about for kind of, I think that could have gotten more recognition. Mm. I think as well, we're talking about like the length of the ceremony. They've tried shortening it like multiple times, and they tried like putting categories aside and doing other ones not televised. But then they're kind of like playing a bit hypocritical with which ones they decide are like,
Yeah.
And also, I guess as an action film fan, I should also mention like there's been loads of call for like a stunts / action choreography Oscar. I don't know.
Tom Cruise every year.
Yeah, actually.
Maybe that's the reason. But then, if you are looking at international films, there's also tons of other things you could pop in there from other countries that could be nominated for that. I think Hong Kong actually does give out
they've got action Oscars.
Oscars. It's all a little pedantic sometimes. But I think what Sam was saying in terms of getting those little films pushed out there to the masses, that is always a good thing, I think.
Mm. Yeah, good stuff. And I did enjoy the host, Conan O'Brien, when he said, I enjoy watching The Brutalist so much, I hoped it would never end, and then it didn't, which I thought was very good.
He also used the fire. So they brought the firefighters on stage.
I saw this. Yeah.
And yeah, he had a joke written out for them as well, where the fireman said, "Oh, it was something along the lines of like, obviously a lot of you have lost your homes, and so have the Joker 2 directors and stuff like that." I was like, it shows the light side of it as well. Obviously, I know it's all written to perform and stuff,
but that helps, right? Because I know it sounds an odd podcast to say this on, because we're all huge fans. It is only film. In the same way that, as a football fan, football is only football. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the way the winners talk,
it's very,
there's tears, and it's like, thanks to all the heroes, and also thanks to me, and telling stories saves lives and follow your dream. It's like, kind of, but I think people hosting it and taking the mick of it is increasingly important.
Yeah, just you really need that counterbalance.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Here's the real world, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think everyone can agree Conan O'Brien is a major step up from Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, 100%.
Jimmy Kimmel gives nothing.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel really did not volunteer any comedy really at all.
Did he give away the lunchboxes last year? Was that the skit?
I don't know.
I thought that was a good skit. Like, he's just giving away lunchboxes, like, here's your break, and, you know, have a banana, because we're all going to sit here for 4 hours, and something like that.
It got to the stage after Aidan Brody's speech, where I was sort of desperate for Will Smith to boot through a fire exit and lump someone just for something to happen.
Yeah. They should have gone to the joke they were making about going to John Lithgow in the audience. They should have just done that. Yeah, to be honest.
They made a joke about it and they didn't do it when someone actually did.
Talk for way too long.
Adrian Brody, you did a good performance, but bro,
not his finest moment, was it?
No. Anyway, chaps, we'll move on. So the Oscars, still relevant, but needs to do a bit of work on that ceremony. But I was pleased for Anora, and I feel like weirdly, you know, like when you're when you've got a mate who supports a rubbish football team and they win something, you're pleased for them. I was sort of pleased for you, Nick, when Anora won. I felt like you should have made it up on stage there.
Yeah, I've still got to wait on the sweepstakes at work, though, so you're going to wait and that happens.
Fumble those hard.
Right, we're going to take a quick break there, then we're going to come back and look at some of the new directors you guys are excited to watch out for in the coming year. So there, we'll be back. Right, welcome back to part two of this edition of the Podyssey. And we're going to be talking a bit with the chaps about new directors to look out for. So, lads, who are you excited to see coming up, see what they do? Who should people be looking out for? Sam, let's start with you.
Okay. So we're showing a couple of films this month. We've got a couple of showings that are kind of revering great directors. So we're showing Blue Velvet towards the end of the month because David Lynch sadly dies not too long ago. And we've got a National Theatre Live screening of Doctor Strangelove, the adaptation by Armando Iannucci from the Stanley Kubrick classic. We thought we'd talk about our kind of favourite up-and-coming directors. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention, again, I actually think I talked about it last month, Past Lives, the director of Past Lives, Celine Song. She's got a new film coming out this year, Materialists, starring Dakota Johnson and Chris Evans. She has got a really kind of incisive ability to represent emotion, human emotion, without any words being spoken. Past Lives is kind of a film that's made of just, it's like sad glances, characters just looking at each other and communicating so much through no dialogue whatsoever. I just thought it was a really terrific film, and it's her first film as well. I really can't wait to see what she does next, and on a much bigger budget and with some really big name actors.
So is that what happens? So Celine Song, so she makes Past Lives, mm-hmm. people take notice, say, wow, this is amazing, and then she gets almost a kind of a bigger budget and bigger stars to play with. Yeah. Is that how it works?
Exactly. I can't remember if she was nominated for Best Picture, but the film was nominated for Best Picture. Okay. I'm not sure if she was for Best Director. But I guess that, in relating back to the relevance of the Oscars, that's kind of how, you know, a relatively small-scale director making a really low-budget film all of a sudden is now put on a big platform with a big budget. So now loads more people will see that film, the new film, and go back and watch Past Lives as well. So,
Can I just say as well that Dakota Johnson and Chris Evans need that good film, because I think I was talking to you recently about, like, I mean, Dakota Johnson's actually quite good at, like, her smaller projects, but Madame Web, obviously, and then, you know, Chris Evans, I think I was like, he's done some rough stuff recently. So I'm glad to hear that they're in a film that is more than likely going to be quite good.
He's a funny sort of actor, isn't he? He's like, he's really famous in loads of things you've seen, really loaded, obviously, but kind of, for a Hollywood AAA lister, so forgettable.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And in a lot, I think he needs to fire his agent, because he's in some terrible films recently.
But he really has been in it for like 20 years as well.
And a great career by any measure.
Yeah. Mm.
But it's kind of weird. Like, he could sort of pop in here, and at first we'd be like, you're right, mate. Have you got a parcel? You know.
Yeah,
you've got
to, yeah.
That's just true.
Yeah, it's
weird. Like when he puts on his hat and sunglasses in Captain America, and he just vanishes. Yeah. Like, that's him as well.
Yeah. And that will kind of, in another kind of segue as well, so we'll probably talk about Mickey 17 later. He was in Snowpiercer by Bong Joon-ho, so he has done interesting stuff. It's just when you see him in Red One, you're like,
oh, what's Red One. We haven't got enough time to talk about that. And that's good news. Out of here. Right, Roberto, let's keep this honest. Talk about your favourite director.
Have you not got any more, Sam?
We can switch back eventually. But, I think with new directors, I was looking at my I was kind of thinking, I was like, what? Because I feel like I watch a lot of directors that have been working for a while. I was kind of, again, Bong Joon-ho with Mickey 17. Even though he obviously kind of, I think most people now know him for Parasite, he's been working for ages. Mm-hmm. He's been working since the 90s with like short films and other stuff. Made Memories of Murder.
I was going to say, he made Memories of Murder.
2003. Mm-hmm. That's, I'd say, almost as good as Parasite as well. But so I was like, yeah, actually, maybe, what kind of new directors have I looked at? And I kind of just went on my Letterboxd kind of films I watched in the last few years. And actually last year I watched loads of films by kind of up-and-coming directors. So I might even just do like a kind of quick rapid fire. Mm-hmm. And this also speaks to kind of the diversifying in the industry, because a lot of them are female directors, which I think definitely put, like, pre, maybe this is just me being like ignorant, but like pre a certain time I would not be going seeing this many films with by voices kind of from and for women in the cinema. So what I want to start with that's interesting is Zelda Williams, directed Lisa Frankenstein, which was just this really nice, like, kind of Tim Burton-esque romance horror dark comedy with Diablo Cody, who wrote it as well. But the visual style is already there, and that's the interesting thing about debuts, I think, is like seeing someone kind of immediately come in and kind of say, this is my voice, here it is, and you kind of really get a good sense of it. Another one was, I think we were talking about this as well, Jane Schoenbrunn. I don't know if I'm pronouncing their name right, but they did I Saw the TV Glow, which was this really kind of melancholy, mesmerizing as well.
That's a great name for a film. I've never heard of that. Yeah, it's such a good name.
It's the film is wild.
It is, yeah, and very. it was a film I was kind of mostly in kind of like this kind of vibe. I was feeling the vibe for a lot of it, and then right at the end, there's this kind of scene that really emotionally affected me, and I keep thinking about it.
Haunts me too. I would.
Yeah, admit, yeah. It's, and their previous film, We're All Going to the World's Fair as well, was really good. Ramel Ross, who just did Nickel Boys, was a film that really punched me in the gut.
Is he new?
We actually showed Nickel Boys. You came to see it on Monday, Nick.
Loved it.
And just what a gut punch.
That looks good, but tough going.
It's tough.
I think that is the kind of the kind of three things there is like when you are a kind of smaller debut director, you can kind of really get your voice across without all that kind of Hollywood money stopping you, like pulling you back. I think that is that's why I really enjoyed quite a lot of the films I've seen in the past couple of years, because they are new voices, fresh voices, kind of really just coming through, punch me in the gut, make me think about the world in different ways.
Yeah,
and I think that's a great thing.
Isn't it? Like, because you know, people talk about diversity because they have to talk about it, but also films do two things, right? So there's films that you get your popcorn out and you just have a really entertaining 2 hours. There's films that do that, and that's great. But also, the best ones teach you about the world, and they teach you about things that you didn't know about, and cultures you didn't know about, and places and people and ways of living you didn't know about. And that's why it's so important that all these diverse voices are coming through now, because that's what a director is, really, isn't it? It's like kind of giving you their worldview and their story, and
showing you a new world as well, showing you a new world through their films.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Sam, I think I cut you off there, because basically I consider myself very much the director of this podcast, and I was so keen at getting us to budget and time that I think, Sam, you had someone else you were going to mention there. So, Nick, we'll come to you in a sec.
All good.
I've got Danny and Michael Philippou, who are the directors of Talk To Me. It's an Australian horror film that came out a couple of years ago.
Raka Raka.
Yeah, they used to be YouTubers called Raka Raka, and they made kind of these really extreme videos where they'd like dress up as Ronald McDonald
and shoot each other, and it actually looked all quite professional.
But yeah, it was very professionally done, and they've effectively been making films for like 15 years or so, but they had their first proper feature film that they self-funded, Talk To Me, a couple of years ago, and A24 put it out, and it's a really, really terrific film, got a really unique voice, very unlike their YouTube stuff. It's very serious,
but it's got some good comedy in it as well.
It's great, and they've got a new film coming out in a few months, Bring Her Back, which stars Sally Hawkins in a kind of her cinematic comeback after being out of the game for a couple of years.
Is that them? I saw the trailer.
That's them.
Is that horror as well?
That's horror as well.
Okay.
Yes. I did see the trailer. The trailer looks great.
Yeah, yeah. That's another good one coming up soon.
No, we can maybe have a little Jolly Boys outing team trip to Yeah. Watch that one at the Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I'll be up for that.
Nice. Sure. Yeah, good stuff. Nick, so last but not least, you've got a few new directors that I know you're excited to talk about.
I've got a couple, yes. Just like to back it up for context, saying I believe these are just people that I'm looking forward to, and they have been in the game. A few of them have been in the game for, you know, 10 years or so, but they've not made like more than 10 films collectively, possibly. So the first one I've got is John M. Chu. Of course, he has been working a while. His first actual feature film was Step Up 2 in 2008, going on to Step Up 3D. And so on. He even did the Justin Bieber documentaries.
Oh, yeah.
But then he sort of left the franchise-esque, you know, franchise parts of Hollywood and then delved into his own sort of diversifying his own sort of films. So he did Crazy Rich Asians 2018, which was very acclaimed for having like a cast mainly from Asia and of Asian descent. Same with the sort of cast and crew of that as well. And then he did Wicked last year, which has been nominated for a lot of awards. In the Heights, I believe, was 2021 or 22. Mm-hmm. So he's sort of getting into his own realm now. He's becoming to do a bit more of his own projects that he
Some
likes.
Some journey that, isn't it? Because Wicked, you know, I wonder how they attach directors to a film that big, you know, because like it's going to be massive.
Yeah.
It's going to be huge budget, you know, the world's kind of film juggernaut for that year. How do you reckon he gets the gig? Do they approach him? I mean, he's not sending a CV off to Wicked, is he?
I mean, well, if we look at having did the research a little bit earlier, Step Up 2, you know, you got Justin Bieber in there and In the Heights. They're all musical based.
Yeah.
Or at least have, you know, tendency around music. So my thinking is, you've done a musical before. If you have interest in musicals, and I believe he said that Wicked was like one of his favourite musicals ever. So I enjoy those because the Wicked and In the Heights, that he just manages to create like a really world through like these diverse voices, and the storylines are okay, but he just manages to make them so like human, like, you know. We showed In the Heights a few years back, and I'm sure the Odyssey audience enjoyed that. But of course, Wicked being one of the biggest family pleasers or people pleasers there. But I'm also looking forward to his future projects. So he's been tipped to direct Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat now.
Oh, they did a film,
which is bringing that to the big screen.
Wow.
I mean, that's definitely not going to be Donny Osmond as one there. But I also wanted to point out that he's been named Best Director by a National Board of Review, and that outdates the Academy. And that was for Wicked. And he was also the best director. He won the Best Director at Critics' Choice Movie Awards. So he's got backing. Mm. And I believe that's something that you should all look at, considering like the people who are in the know are wanting him to, you know, push forward as well.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because he's a name that nobody on the street, even having the millions and billions, probably getting into the billions, who've watched Wicked, nobody would know his name. That's kind of mad, right?
Yeah,
like Spielberg, right, you know all the big directors, but no one has heard of him.
It also seems to me he's kind of like worked in reverse, because he started with just kind of studio projects. I was going to say, he's also the director of G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Yeah. Is he?
That? Yeah.
Wow. He kept that. He didn't mention that in the Wicked meeting, I reckon.
But like, I think obviously now with Crazy Rich Asians and Wicked, you can kind of see, and In the Heights as well, you can kind of see he wants to tell stories about... he wants diversity, kind of stories about inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of see that come through as he's worked his way up. So he's he's what you might call a journeyman director in that way.
Mm-hmm.
My next director is Robert Eggers. So he recently directed Nosferatu, but he's only ever made four films, including Nosferatu, the first being The Witch, 2015, then The Lighthouse, and then The Northman as well.
All kind of dreamy, ethereal, mad ones. Style.
He's got a style, and he's always really gothic. And his own words, he's got a strict attention to detail with these films as well. Considering that he also said in an interview that he would never want to make a film in contemporary times, and the latest he'll ever bring his films up to is 1950s. I was going to say that I think considering that, I feel like that's almost the definition of an auteur, where you stick to your rules,
yeah,
and you have bugger everyone else and you stick to what you know. And he's obviously made a brilliant career out of it, because I think he's suddenly one to look out for. I think a lot of people would agree that he's one to look out for, especially not, I think Nosferatu, it wasn't like top 10, but it was definitely a great movie.
I really enjoyed it.
It's such a like period drama as well. I love the history that he has in his films, and he just manages to bring something out of his actors on screen like no one else.
Norseman was like wild, wasn't it?
That was some muddy, like the lion king for adults basically.
You felt quite, it's a bit like The Revenant or something, you felt a bit knackered yourself by the end of it, wanted to have a shower and like a pizza.
It was nasty.
Amazing.
And the last report for Eggers was that he was mentioned to be directing a werewolf film set in the 13th century England, which is something definitely
that
to look
sounds
forward
cool
to.
Yeah,
but even better cool. I'm sorry, everyone in the 80s is going to help me, is that he's rumoured to be writing and directing a sequel to 1986 film Labyrinth.
Yeah, I saw
really?
This.
Really?
Mm. So
that's quite brave, because that is a film that a lot of people
you can't touch something
just like love.
Yeah, yeah, people love Labyrinth.
But can you imagine like Labyrinth with its, you know, Jim Henson dark roots? Then mixing that with Robert Eggers. That
could be amazing.
Crazy.
I'm always scared he might get kicked off the project for wanting to do it a certain way.
Yeah,
because Labyrinth, right? It's a fun family film. It's really dark. Like David Bowie, you know, you can see
kidnaps a baby.
Candidly, you can see everything through his leggings.
You can,
they haven't bothered editing that out. And then he kidnaps a baby that he maybe wants to marry or something. Like, it's pretty weird.
He wants to give it up to the goblins.
That's right. Yeah.
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 But I mean, incredible, just hearing that though, honestly, it'd make you think like, wow, I want to see that.
That's a must see, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next film I had in mind was Rose Glass. She's an English filmmaker, writer and director. And a lot of these actually all writer and directors, so multi-talented people. Rose Glass, she's come up through mostly short films. That her first one in 2010 called Moths, 2015. But her debut was St. Maud, which was released in 2019. Film lovers and critics lapped up. And Rose Glass was then classed as someone to watch.
What type of film was St. Maud?
So it's like a psychological thriller.
I've actually not seen it, but I remember the poster being quite
terrifying. It's like a plain white poster. It's quite terrifying. Yeah. You look at the imagery, it's crazy.
One of my favourite films ever.
Yeah.
Seriously,
I love it. I think
I might watch it tonight. Am I going to be able to sleep and watch it tonight?
Maybe not.
I'm home alone. I do want to watch it.
Well, if you don't want to watch St. Maud, then you can watch a second feature, which is Love Lies Bleeding, which is also a great, great film. That's not a horror. It's a little bit of a thriller, I'd say, but it's so stylistically like good. And I think, is it set in the 80s or am I?
It's got that 80s vibe for sure.
Yeah.
It's very muscular.
Yeah. It's got like it almost looks like you've got that like desert backdrop almost like to
neon,
it all the time. Neon vibe.
Revolvers.
Muscular is a great description.
Mature.
Like
which is a great movie. And I think she's something to watch as well, because she also in an interview said that her inspirations were that of Roman Polanski, Martin Scorsese and Paul Verhoeven. So I feel like she's already very, very well versed in film history, in her inspirations to create something of her own, which is going to be on that same level.
Good for
and
her.
She's already been obviously acclaimed through the first film and her second film, Love Lies Bleeding. So I think she's got a great future ahead of her. A couple more directors. I've got Andrew Haig, is it? So he's, again, been around for a while. He directed Weekend in 2011, 45 Years. It's a great movie with Charlotte Rampling and Tom Courtenay. That was in 2015.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Lean on Pete, which I never saw. Unfortunately, but I did hear it was a great movie. And All of Us Strangers, which I do think is like a masterpiece in filmmaking. All throughout, obviously, I feel like he's taking it at his own pace. And I believe, obviously, he did have, there was some difficulty during COVID with one of his films that I think he had to completely drop because of COVID delays and so on. But, I actually forgot to mention that he co-created an American series called Looking, which starred Jonathan Groff and Russell Tovey. It's a bit like a co-collaborative between the UK and the US, but that was like coming-of-age, like gay romance drama, which I never saw on TV at the time.
I remember that being out, yeah.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of it, and they made a TV movie of that as well, because it's like a niche audience, but that was great. And he's always just had a penchant for like telling quite human stories, And All of Us Strangers was just like the pinnacle of all of that, to be honest. Did love that movie. Last but not least, I've got Destin Daniel Cretton.
Oh,
good name.
As the one to watch. He started making short films as a hobby after his graduation. He graduated in communications, but then eventually went to film school. In between that time, he worked as a staff member at a group home for at-risk teenagers, which inspired his second feature, which is Short Term 12, starring Brie Larson, Lakeith Stanfield, Rami Malek, at the time where they were all starting as well. You know, sort
some
of
cast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great movie as well. It's just got one of those like wonderful but bittersweet, and it's like it's really lovely to look at, but the story's telling you quite an emotional like gut punch of a story, considering all these teens are sort of just want to move on with their lives and out of the institute they have. But he just again brings a wonderful sort of humanity to his movies. Just Mercy is another movie of his starring Michael B. Jordan, that sort of like civil rights.
I saw that. I've seen it. It's very, very good.
Yeah. No. Again, something that I think he brings like incredible humanity to. But then, you know, leading on to he directed Shang-Chi, which arguably is the best Marvel movie in the last 5 years. And then onwards from that, as we were saying, influence, he's getting bigger. He's now be confirmed to be directing the next Spider-Man film. Mm. So he's making his way up there. And I think it's definitely something to watch out for. I mean, he was even possibly going to direct the next Avengers movie after the success of Shang-Chi.
Isn't it interesting as well, because the big superhero franchises, they know they're getting stale. Unavoidably. Mm. I know that sometimes we disagree on they are fundamentally getting stale. So they're now taking punts on interesting directors to hope they can do something with them. I think that's really interesting, and it's got to be good for those. That's got to be good for the Spider-Man franchise that somebody from kind of left field is taking it on. You know,
He's a fresher voice than maybe people they had in mind or anything like that. I think they trusted the Russo brothers enough, and now they need to. Honestly, I think in life anyway, you just need a bit of vitality, variety, and then that will inspire other voices, new storylines. Mm-hmm. Simply put,
that's a great place to end that section, lads. Some really good selections of new directors there, and a lot for those listening to watch out for. So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll have a little quick look at what's coming up at the Odyssey over the next month. Hello and welcome back to part 3 of the Podyssey, where we'll take a look at what's coming up in the next few weeks at the Odyssey that's got the chaps excited. So Sam, let's hear from you first. What are you looking forward to in the next few weeks?
So we've got a very special screening of Doctor Strangelove, the National Theatre production that was co-adapted by Armando Iannucci and Sean Foley. So we're showing that on the 15th and the 29th, but on the 15th, Saturday the 15th at 2 p.m, we have it with a special Q&A, live Q&A with some very special guests, which are David DeWilde, who's the editor of Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey, his daughter Katerina Kubrick, who was in several of his films, Giles Torrera, who's one of the actors in the play itself, who's best known for playing Aaron Burr in the London production of Hamilton. And the Q&A is hosted by Helen O'Hara, who's the editor at Empire Magazine and a writer for The Guardian as well.
That is amazing. That is nice. So first of all, we need to tap up Empire Magazine to push the Podyssey.
Absolutely.
I've got an invite to that, which I'm very excited about. I think that's going to be a good do, and some big film hitters there as well.
There are very big film hitters, and yes, Armando is a friend of the Odyssey, and he's also pre-recorded a video that's going to be screened for both of the showings as well, which is just an exclusive for us.
That's amazing.
Yeah, very cool.
So cool. Roberto, can you top that? I don't think you can.
No, I'm just going to go straight for a much smaller event at our cinema. I've got Thursday the 20th of March, we've got The Monkey at 7:30, which is the new film by Osgood Perkins, who directed Longlegs last year. Very close releases there. This looks to be it's a Stephen King adaptation about two twin brothers who kind of have to battle against a monkey drummer doll that kind of causes Rube Goldberg deaths to the people around them. It looks to be a bit of a laugh and a bit of a scare as well. The trailer's got a real kind of nod and a wink about it, so that looks to, if you're looking for some fun, I highly recommend The Monkey there. But on a different note, we've also got Blue Velvet on Thursday the 27th of March at 7:30. Of course, directed by David Lynch and kind of honouring his passing just a month ago or so. Not a controversial take, I think, to say he's probably one of the greatest filmmakers we've seen. Had a real amazing style that hasn't really been topped. The word Lynchian is, of course, coined after his style. And Blue Velvet's a great starting point for his filmography. Shows the kind of dark side that he always kind of dealt with in his films, but also the kind of real empathy he has. He really was a great filmmaker, so I do recommend Blue Velvet there.
Excellent. So some good stuff coming up, some kind of like big, classy offerings. Nick, what you got for us?
I'm quite excited to watch I'm Still Here, which is just won the Best International Film Oscar over the weekend from this time of recording. We'll have that on Tuesday the 18th of March at 7:30 and Wednesday the 19th of March at 12:30. The story concerns when Brazil was in its military dictatorship in the 70s and 80s. It's sort of just about this family. His husband and wife, the husband is a political figure, and he sort of just disappears one evening, and then it's just purely about the struggle and the survival of this lady and her family throughout their lives in Brazil. Brazil are very happy, I believe, with the Oscar win. I know our lad Camilo is very happy. So I'm excited for him. I'm excited to see the movie as well. It definitely has some acclaim. Fernanda Torres also won the Golden Globe for her performance too. So I feel like there's something to watch in that for sure, without, you know, prior knowledge, to be honest. But I've also got another international film coming up, The Seed of the Sacred Fig. And this is Monday the 24th of March at 7:30. I don't know too much about this one. I know it's from Iran. So quite a politically... tumultuous place anyway.
Well, because, the cast have all left Iran apart from one, I believe, because she had like an injury or was in hospital or something like that. So they're all wanted, but have fled the country. She is currently under house arrest and is facing like 40 lashes. She's the star of this film.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy, really insane.
That's
news.
Brave. That's brave filmmaking.
It's brave, exactly. Yeah, sure. Giving your life for the film, really.
So I feel like the least we can all do is head and see what they've got to say to us there.
Yeah, I just want to quickly mention as well, we do have, I mean, we're all film lovers here, so we should be getting a ticket for Hans Zimmer and Friends, Diamond in the Desert. This is the latest of sort of our concert films that we usually show at least once a month. And Hans Zimmer is this month, at Sunday, 23rd of March at 6:30. I mean, what's not to love? You've got Hans Zimmer playing some sort of wild instrument and playing film. But, you know, showcasing the best of what he's got. So you're going to have some parts of The Dark Knight in there, composing some of the Dune music and some interviews with artists that he's worked with before, directors too. I know there's an interview with Christopher Nolan in there. So something for film lovers to watch out for.
Yeah, that sounds good. Like, some really good stuff. Not a blockbuster among them. That's really good. That's what The Odyssey is all about, in my opinion. Chaps, unbelievably, we've come to the end. We made it. We had the odd technical issue, which we won't bore the listeners with. We've made it to the end. So I think all that remains is for us to say goodbye and thank you to everybody. And I think we should probably do it in the style of a fairly quick Oscars acceptance speech. So who would like to go first? Roberto.
Okay. It's always me. Okay, here we go. Hey, guys, thanks for the Oscar. Turn the music off right now. Anyway, let me stay here for another 10 minutes. Watch The Odyssey, and here's a long list of people to say thank you to. Also go to the Odyssey Cinema, and then just extend that for like 10 minutes. Yeah.
Nick, let's have you.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening to The Odyssey. I really couldn't believe it. I've got so many people to thank, but I really want to thank me for being a part of it. Thank you so much for listening.
That's good.
Very good, Sam.
Oh, I've got so many people to thank. Thank you for listening. Thank you, The Odyssey. Thank you, Mix 92.6. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Roberto. Thank you, Neil. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Moving speech. And I would like to say thank you to you at home for listening. You are why we make this podcast. You are why we matter. Believe in your dreams. You can be you. This can be real. The Odyssey. What? Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. That is the end of us for this month. We love you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at the Podyssey, you can email me at neil.rodger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at the Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.